can post them in it. Okay, well, this is the bargaining session on this October 27th, 2021 between the UCF BOT team and the UCF UFF team. And the first order of business is to check and make sure that the minutes are accurate.
Looks all right to me.
Yeah, it looks okay.
Okay. So the minutes.
No objections.
There are no objections to the minutes, so thank you for that, Brianna. And I believe, according to the agenda that you sent us to Lawton, that we agreed to, you guys are up first with some responses to our articles and then some articles of your own.
Actually, we're going to make it very simple. So article, I can go over that these, but I basically, we went through article 12, 13, and 19. Those mm-hmm. were the three that you presented, and after a lot of discussion, what you know, we came to the conclusion that it would be good to just use the status quo from 2018-2021. So
okay,
unless I correct me if I'm wrong, folks, I think we wanted to do status quo on all three, right? Oh, actually, there's one. I'm sorry. There is. Let me share. I need to look at one of them. It's not status quo on all of them. So I think I went a little too far with my status quo. So.
A lot, yes. From what I recall, 13 and 19.
Yeah. And 18, I was just going to. Yeah, right. So 13 is status quo and 19 is status quo. And 12. We just had a small adjustment, I think. Right, let me just see, and yeah, right. Let me just do one, yeah. Yeah, so this one.
Okay. She's checking one of her computers.
No, I just did that. I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
let me share 12. Yeah, I think. So 12 was basically, so we did not want to eschew 12 totally because total it needed, one was minor adjustment over here. Can you see my screen?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was just changing 2020 to 2022. This is just the, you know, just bringing it up to date. And then there was just one item here that was, remember when we had first mm-hmm. talked about it, we wanted to take that out. But we can tell you right now the rationale for it. So what we have found is that if there's no mutual agreement and university decides to essentially pay somebody off, the person may not want that for a variety of reasons. It could be healthcare. It could be they need they would rather work the year, so they're given 1 year. They have 1 year that they can be here. And they would rather be here for a variety of reasons. So we would like to, what we are proposing is that we, instead of university may elect in its discretion, we would like it to change to university may offer to pay the employee for all of the notice period or a portion of, could be also, we took that off, as may be allowed under Florida law if the university and the employee mutually agree. So that's what we had requested earlier too. So basically that this should be based on mutual agreement. And then the other sentence that we added here was again because of precedence where somebody was given, told that they are being paid out and they did not even have 2 hours to go and clear out their desk or change their email or what have you. So basically, we put in a sentence here so that the employee has a little bit of time to retrieve all of their property and belongings, whatever, email, and so on. So that's what we are proposing here.
Talat, can you scroll up? Because I didn't see. Well, first off, this is your second proposal, not your third proposal. But okay. did you respond to the additional bright line that we had that's pretty important to our team? So I just wanted to see.
They want to do status quo, Charlie.
Oh, I just wanted to make sure because I didn't see. It went by really fast. So I just wanted to see. So you did not respond to that bright line?
No. Okay. We wanted it to be status quo.
And I want to tell you that that is a really important thing to our team. Also, do you want to say it's UFF03, even though it's your second proposal? I'll just mark it down.
If it's our second, we will change it to two.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure, just for tracking. Well, that's fine.
So I do want to say something about that because obviously this concerns, we're talking about appointments like that where university wants to have the flexibility to fire people during the academic year. I mean, not during the academic year, yes, because after one semester. So that there be two periods during which an employee can be removed. And the problem that we have with that is that, you know, people are coming here, it's a R1 university trying to get even higher in ranking. And so, you know, we typically think of long-term appointments here. People don't, you know, teaching is not a profession in which you just walk in and walk out. You do it with a certain commitment. And people who also come and join, they are also making a commitment to the institution. So we do not see why there is this need to have another window in which somebody can be fired. We just don't see that. We would think that we are moving towards a situation where all of our appointments are long-term appointments. Of course, things can go wrong and somebody may not be the right fit. And so somebody would have to be terminated. We totally understand that. But we are talking about people who are coming in and making a commitment, and they also have to then worry about their own future. So we don't see why this management flexibility is so necessary. That just doesn't fit in with what we think of as a great university. And so I'm not sure what was the rationale for wanting these two bright lines, as you had mentioned. I just don't see how it affects the university negatively if you had one day as it is here rather than two periods, one in the fall and one in the spring.
Okay. Talat, one thing that I would point out is it's very easy to fall into it. Situation where I tend to myself, and I think about 9-month faculty, but there are many employees in the bargaining unit that are not 9-month instructional employees, and having that second date for people that are on usually 12-month appointments and so forth is very helpful to the university. It gives considerable flexibility. Otherwise, all employees in the bargaining unit are treated like 9-month instructional faculty.
So could I ask for clarification then? Is it not possible to have exceptions? is it not possible to clarify that? I mean, just like we clarify things for CNG faculty and ENG faculty and auxiliaries and so on, you're right. I mean, when I'm thinking about employees here, I am thinking about mostly about instruction faculty, whereas we should be thinking about everyone. And so then the question that comes in is that first of all, how often is this, do you run into this problem? What percentage of faculty are affected by that? And whether we then want to talk about which category it should apply to. Right now it applies to everyone.
Well, the way we've proposed it, both bright lines would apply to everyone as it's been proposed.
Right, and right. So for example, again, we'll have to deal with some concrete examples because there could be people who are not instructional faculty for whom this having these windows is not a problem. But for instructional faculty, hiring and it takes place only at certain times in the academic year, and so I think that's why I think there is this issue. So if we knew more exactly who in the bargaining unit, which categories in the bargaining unit would be affected by. We are talking about ENG, we're not talking about CNG. So right. ENG, who all would it apply to? I do not know. I mean, I would like to know about that, that who are the people and whether it affects them also. You know, I mean, we'll have to see how it affects them. Because we have to speak for all members of the bargaining unit. So you have an example, Chuck, of who it would be?
I'm sorry?
You have an example of an ENG appointment where that kind of flexibility would benefit both sides?
Well, as I said, what we've proposed is that both bright lines would apply to all in-unit employees. But there are examples of 12-month employees, for example, in the creative school, in the counseling center, in the library, for example.
Writing and rhetoric has instructional faculty that are 12 months.
So Chuck, let me correct you real quick. Two of those three units are funded by auxiliary funds, so they're not part of this discussion.
Okay.
I have multiple examples of 12-month employees, though, instructional and not all research associates, almost all of them are 12-month.
But research associates are all CNG?
Not all of them. No, not all of them. Most of them, yes, but there's quite a few. Hold on just a second. I'll do a calculation.
I mean, CNG is all covered, right? We're only talking about ENG appointments, right? And then yes. if we know exactly what the intention is, then maybe you want to set it out in that if that's important. I mean,
I have 96 people that are in unit ENG 12-month faculty people.
Okay.
So 100 people fit into that box of 12-month in-unit ENG faculty.
Okay. Well, you know, so this is our proposal right now. And if that is one that is of great concern, then maybe, you know, you can come back with the where it separates it out and it doesn't apply. And then we'll have to see how it works.
Okay. We'll take a look at that, Talat.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. So I think that is the main one. And
Talat, can I point out one more thing on Article 12?
Yeah.
In 12.1, we had recommended striking any reference to Article 13.
Well, because we are asking to eschew Article 13, I think right now it seems like we can't take that out.
Okay. There's no interaction between them. That's why it's even though it's status quo, Your proposal, the current status quo, there's no interaction between 12 and 13.
Yes, there is. At the bottom of 13, it says that recall rights and layoff rights are not applicable to CNG and auxiliary appointments.
So 13.6 says it shall not apply to employees described in section 12 and 8.
So our proposal for 13 keeps it status quo, so there still is the connection between 12 and 13.
Where?
I'm going to share.
At the bottom of 13 in status quo, it says the people listed in these rights are in these sections of Article 12 don't have specific rights in this article.
Yeah.
I just don't see that in our status quo.
Here it is, if you can see my screen.
That's...
This is 13.6, right?
So yeah, at the last sentence of 13. Yeah.
Here it is.
0.6.
The provisions do not apply to employees described in 12.2b.
Right. If we keep
that. Okay. All right. I think I see what you're saying. Understood.
Yep. Got it.
Okay, so that then the other is, and so with 19, mentioned that there, because 19, we would like to keep it at status quo. And what we agreed, or what we discussed last time, was that anything that's a state and federal law applies to all of us, right? And so in 19, there was this one issue which had to do with summer, people who are not working for the university during the summer. Now, for most people, if they are doing research or they're doing any other activity, you know, of course they are all connected. So there's a small group, perhaps, I don't know if it is small or large, but I think it is a smaller group that who are not teaching in the summer or who are not doing research in the summer or not doing any activity connected with the university. So that would be the only one to whom what you were suggesting, that they should be reporting their activities in the summer, would apply it. The rest of us will have to apply do that in any case.
Okay.
So, and actually we're making life very easy for everyone here. We already accepted or proposed status quo for Article 4. We would like to propose the same for Article 8. Do you guys want to go over it or?
Well, sure. I mean,
if she's saying status quo, there's really nothing to go over.
Okay.
That Article 8 is about appointments. Mm-hmm. And at this point, prefer to keep it status quo. There are some articles that we might agree to reopen, but at the moment, I think we would go with status quo. With 16, 16 is the one on, 16 is letters of counsel and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
There again, we would go with status quo.
Okay.
And then the one that where we had quite a bit of discussion was 24. And that is one where a lot more discussion is needed. However, given the urgency, this is benefits. And that is one in which we would like to reopen it at some point. But for the moment, we think it would be best to go with status quo.
Okay, Talat, can you just give us kind of a heads up on what in particular about 24 you want to revisit, just so I kind of have a sense of.
I guess one of the one that came up was the tuition waiver program. I think that was probably brought up in the last session as well, because mm-hmm. There are provisions for tuition waivers, but somehow the way it is set up right now, it doesn't help. It's more of a finer details that need to be worked out than anything substantial. Is there a team? Did you guys have want to say something about 24, about anything else in 24 that we should be looking at? I do have one thing more in mind, but go ahead, John.
No, I think we talking points that we've had in the past was basically on tuition, the tuition waiver program, and also the paid parental leave program.
Paid parental leave is not there at the moment. Yeah.
No, it's there at the moment. Just that we have had discussions about it, but given our priorities at this time, we're proposing status quo.
Okay. So if I'm understanding you, you're looking at possibly the next round, in addition to salaries, reopening 24 to discuss the tuition waiver program, and maybe 17 to discuss parental leave.
Well, 17 is yes. Yes.
That's cool, then we don't
need. Sorry. Yes. Yeah. You're right. You're right. Sure.
Yeah.
I confused myself with putting paid parental leave in 24 and not in.
Yeah, I do the same thing. The leaves and the benefits articles kind of blur with me sometimes, so I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have made it very simple. Well, we will. Team, do you want to take a caucus now, or do you want to wait? And, well, wait a minute. Let us present. So it's our turn now all of a sudden. Okay, maybe we'll present a couple of our articles and then we can both take a caucus and have some discussion. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. So I can start off with some good news, a little bit of good news. We are willing to TA on 21 and 6 as status quo. Mm-hmm. If that is workable for you, then
that's great.
We can get two more off the table.
Yep.
Nine, I have talked multiple times with the provost and with Jana, and they are simply, I mean, the provost is just dug in on, he will not sign off on allowing people unilateral choice on whether they want to hold their office hours in person or online. He feels very strongly that, because I think some of the deans have been very vocal, department chairs, about it works. It works for some people, it works for some programs, others, they feel like it doesn't work well for him and or for them. And I think there's also a concern that in certain areas you might just have faculty that never put set foot on the campus, quite honestly. So he wants to maintain the flexibility that, yes, it's, that the university will not say that you can or cannot do this, but that the individual supervisors have to have some input into this. So, other than that, we are agreed on everything in 9, so you guys can talk about that and see what you want to say about that. Let's see, Article 22, you want to put that one up and we'll go over that real quickly? Somebody have that that they can put up on the screen for me?
Your team.
Yeah, just give me just a second.
This could be a short session.
We could have just emailed you.
Okay, I think that we're still pretty far apart on this one, but we've made some changes in ours. So Charlie, you want to scroll down a little bit and let's see where we are on this.
First, let me just point, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Part of the problem with our response on 22 is that when you responded to us last time, you used an earlier proposal of ours, and so we kind of missed things. So there may be things that you did agree to that we didn't capture because we had moved and you were looking at an older proposal of ours. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
Okay.
Okay, so let's
We were far apart on only 2 points, I think.
Yeah, I think. Well,
We wanted to make sure that we were okay with these changes. You can respond in line with this one later. Just in case, we didn't want to accept it without making sure that we had your consent.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than breaking your trust by making a change that you didn't feel that you agreed to. So that's we just don't do that. We think you understand that the ranked list is important to sort of refer to it, but we wanted to make sure you knew that.
Yeah.
Same with E1, I believe. Okay.
Yeah. We did accept changes here for this, but we highlighted it so you can check it against the language and decide if you're still in agreement. And if you're not, just let us know. But because of the difference in proposals, we weren't sure.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck came up with language here to replace this, that he feels like it puts it in better order and makes it clearer. You know, that's for you to look at.
We'll take a look, yeah.
Did you want to say anything else, Chuck, about that? Before I roll on.
The only change that I made, as Charlie said, was in the sequencing of the sentences. There was a final sentence that talked about how the overall evaluation is determined. I just moved that up to the second sentence. I think it flows better. I hope you agree.
I think there's not a lot of disagreement about the concept. It was just a matter of finding language we agreed to.
Right.
Charlie, can I ask a question back in the language?
Here?
So on line, at the end of line 110, what are you considering ensuing circumstances?
This here?
Yes. I understand in light of the proposal, but then ensuing circumstances seems a little nebulous.
John, there have been a couple of instances where folks on sabbatical or on professional development leave have been, for one reason or another, unable to complete the project that they had proposed.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I'm concerned, that's what the ensuing circumstances are, that something was proposed, something may happen, and perhaps a change needs to be made, as we've suggested in here, that, you know, if there's a change that has to be made, get that cleared and all is well. We want to make sure that if somebody does find themselves having to make a change and that change to a new project is granted, we want that those ensuing circumstances to be accounted for in the evaluation. We don't want to evaluate somebody solely on their original proposal if mm-hmm. that project can't be completed.
We could perhaps, you know, I mean, if you're amenable to it, we could just modify it to say exactly that.
Yeah, we've had that a couple of times, and it hasn't really been a problem.
Yeah,
because they were able to substitute something that their chair agreed to. But, you know, then again, you don't want them to have to be evaluated on something that they weren't able to do. So
if they're on sick leave, for instance, are not able to finish their sabbatical, that's
right. So what we could say, for example, this sabbatical proposal and any ensuing changes that may have been agreed upon or something like that.
Something like that would be fine. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the clarification.
Sure. I mean, we were trying to be helpful. We'll see. I mean, that's not a deal breaker for me, but okay. And the must disclose.
We have to do that because of the conflict of interest.
Yeah, we have to.
So
PDLs are where I think we are still far apart. We will. We're willing to, in our from our standpoint, sort of meet you part of the way. We will keep the number of PDLs that we currently have instead of cutting them. But the provost would really, really like to limit these to one semester and not be a full year. So that's something you guys are going to have to kind of talk about and think about. So that's where we are on that.
Where else are we apart?
This here, I think we may be close, but I can't tell. So I need you to just check and make sure that you're okay with this language, because we had that crossed agreements.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we talked about the mission and goals. It was pointed out that it was that that the UFF struck this sentence saying it was redundant, but we didn't see, I searched for mission and goals and didn't find it anywhere else in this document. So I just wanted to make sure that you knew that it's not that we're trying to, you know, it's not in this and it needs to be, because they need to be able to serve the mission and goals of the university. That's how PDL people are, you know, found, and they need to know that when they're creating their application. So
I also took a look at the Faculty Excellence website, and the section on PDLs, and I couldn't find mission and goals there either.
So that's important.
Shouldn't we say that up front?
Perhaps we can look for that in your response if you want to move it there. Just letting you know that it's an important piece to add, because it is sort of the basis of allowing someone to take a PDL. I mean, John got his terminal degree, right? That's important to the mission and goals. That's why he was permitted to take it, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Speaking of what was on the PDL website, we proposed language about specifically stating what the application window was for professional development leave, since it's handled at the university level.
Right. We put in here that we prefer the status quo without the timeline right now. We're far apart enough that we're not worrying about that piece at the moment. Chuck deemed this as like deemed worthy of a PDL shall be ranked. That's consistent with the sabbatical language. It just reframed. It's the same language, just flipped around.
Okay. I think this is all similar language.
So one point of information, Sherry.
Sure.
They go for one semester. Do they get full support?
Full pay.
Full pay. So it's one semester full pay and two semesters?
No, there's no two semesters after.
No, but what we have right now.
Currently, it would be one semester at full pay, two semesters at three-quarter.
At three-quarters, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
So this is just language that you need to look at and decide if you can accept, you know, Ann Dean, because you accepted it above, but not in here. And again, that may have been a problem with the cross proposals.
Yeah,
you can take a look at that.
Yeah.
This is the same kind of shifting that Chuck talked about earlier, where he just sort of reframed it in a different order to make it more clear. Just take your time, look at it, see if you can agree to that. It has that same ensuing circumstances language that you may want to see more clarity on. That's fine. Again, we're really trying to help the employee here by putting must disclose. I think it really helps the employees when they're considering these to see that.
But again, that's not a hill I'm willing to die on. So there are other things in here that I am. So that one is not. So, okay. I think that's all of 22.
Is there anything else you want to look at in this proposal, or are we good for the moment? Because I'll send it to you.
We're fine. We'll take a look.
Great.
Okay. 23, it is probably not a surprise to you that we are rejecting the increases in the salary increases. We're going to hold at 2.5%. That's what we have. And that's what we're going to do. I think Chuck had one change in the awards he wanted to mention.
Let me bring it up. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
I'm trying to get the Article 22 loaded, and let's see, Article 23. On screen share. They need like a one button screen share button. I do not know why Word suddenly decided to put all of my index stuff as visible.
Currently, it's lines 150 and 151, it looks like.
All right.
Somewhere around there.
I'll fix those later. Would you say 150?
Yes, please.
There we go.
Which one are you showing us?
Tip 158, it looks like on here.
So, yeah.
Before you do that, Sherry, so we, you know, they're going to stick to two, or you are going to stick to 2.5%.
Yes.
And so what, you know, how did that number come about? I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, there has to be some rationale, right? So in terms of budget considerations, or, you know, there were, for example, discussions in the Senate about how funds had been put aside for faculty salary raises. So, you know, it would be where that number came from.
No funds were put aside for any raises this year initially. This was, I mean, we were not going to do any raises this year. And some people said, went to the president and the provost and Gerald Hector, the CFO, I guess, and said, we have to give people money this year. We have not given a raise in several years. People have been working really hard. They're beat up. We've got to give some people some money. And if my understanding is that the money for the raises came out of the president's strategic fund. You know, he put out that document saying he wanted to fund certain things to help advance the university, get to the whatever best top 50 in metropolitan research universities or whatever the thing was, I don't even remember. And that the money came out of that. That's where it came from, and that's all. We don't have any more than that.
All raises came from that. I mean, because
everything came from that. Yeah.
And
we are essentially, I know people, you know, you see headlines in things like the Chronicle, it says, well, we prospered and we didn't prosper. What happened to us is that we didn't take the massive hit in reduction of students. During the pandemic year, our enrollment stayed consistent, maybe even went up a tiny, tiny bit. We did lose some money from the state, but we didn't lose as much as we thought we were going to lose. So that enabled us to keep our heads above water. But, you know, we didn't. And of course, we spent a lot on, you know, making changes to the university to kind of cope with COVID. COVID, a lot of that we got back through HERF funds. I'm not going to say that we didn't, but not everything. So it's been a tough year, you know, all the way around. But I think the administration realized that this has been a long, dry spell, and people had really put in an enormous amount of blood, sweat, and tears into the university over this past year with COVID and everything else that happened. And, you know, we really needed to get some money out to people. So that's what they did. And, you know, my understanding is they took it out of there and that's what we've got. So.
Just the 2.5%, that's now to, I assume it will be to staff as well, right?
Yes. Yes and no, because it will be to staff I hate to say this on tape because I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work, because some of our staff will fall under the provisions of the constitutional amendment so that they will have to be raised to a certain dollar amount per hour. Mm-hmm. And that may affect the calculation of whether they get the 2.5% or not. I really can't answer that. But for people like...
No, that's not an issue.
For most people who don't fall into that category, right. Yes.
Right. But in general, that's...
In general, yes. Yeah. So, idea was everybody needs some help this year.
Right. And so that's... good to know that everyone is going to get it. So, you know, that's the first thing. And so when that amount is calculated, can we find out how much that amount is? I mean, you know, obviously.
Yeah, I think we can.
It would be good to get that number. It would be good to get an idea of, as you say, it's coming from the strategic plan.
I think we can do sort of a quick back of the envelope on how much it is for faculty, right, Chuck?
We probably could come up with something pretty good.
I think Kevin did something to that effect. And there's a question in the chat, and I guess it will be the same thing, that it will be 3.5 for those who earn less than 48,500.
Yes.
Right? So basically the offer is the same as what was given to out of unit. Okay. And this, I know that there was recurring money that was put in the strategic initiative. So what you're saying is that is where it's coming from.
That's where it's coming from. Yep.
Not any other calculation that was done in the budget.
No. If we had not used that strategic money, there would have been no raises this year for anybody, because mm-hmm. we just, didn't have it.
So, I think we should, when we go into caucus, we'll come back, because we have some more points that we would like to bring up, but I think it would be better to get feedback from everyone and then come back for it, so that's fine. Thanks for clarifications there. So there's a question, is the claim that there's a question in the chat, which I guess everyone, is the claim that these are the only monies available, and if so, what else are those monies being used for?
Well, if I recall, you have access to our operating budget, so you can look and see what they're being used for. I don't actually go and study the operating budget, but.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chuck, did you want to?
I will say this, that raises come out of central administration.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting a new budget model next year, which I frankly don't really understand very well, but we're currently on the one that we've been on for a long time. And as of right now, even before this money was made available for raises, all of the money that was left over, so to speak, from things like paying the light bill, was pushed out to the colleges. So the colleges have all the money right now. And central administration has got like nothing in the bank after we pay for these raises. So, that's our peculiar budget model that we use here.
Sherry, but the strategic initiative that the president has undertaken, that actually came from dissolving some positions that I understand.
I have no idea where it came from.
Okay. All right. All right. I think.
All right, well, let's take a look at this one change that we're proposing for the distribution of the tips and RIAs. We're not talking about any change in the total number of tips or the total number of RIAs, but as has been the case for several years, there are some groups that get lumped together in sort of an extra or pseudo college. And what we are proposing here is that for this group that is put together just for the purposes of these awards, that one tip and one RIA be available, rather than basing it on the number of employees in that sort of arbitrarily constructed unit. Because many of the employees that end up in there are not assigned to teach. Many have no research assignment. So we would rather see more tips and RIAs available for the employees who have a much more substantial teaching assignment and a more substantial research assignment. So we think it's a question of, it's just a very reasonable way to distribute the tips and RIAs more consistently with where the teaching and research work is done.
Let me understand it, Chuck. So you're not increasing the number of tips and RIAs, or are you?
The total number stays the same.
Okay.
What we're saying is this extra college that we create for purposes of the awards, would get one tip and one RIA instead of, I think it was four or five RIAs this year is going to that group. And there seems to be a challenge getting that many very strong RIA proposals. And there are folks in the other colleges, the regular colleges, who maybe need just a better opportunity to get one of those tips and RIAs. So this is what we propose as a solution, just not to change the number. The university is still committed to the same number of incentive awards. It's just a matter of how those are distributed to the units.
So Chuck, a College of Undergraduate Studies, who's under that? Or College of Graduate Studies? I mean, we have the 8 colleges, right?
I think we're up to 13.
We are up to 13.
Where have you been, Talat?
All right. I don't know. I can check which colleges you created in the last. Okay. Yeah, some new ones that have been created.
Well, undergraduate studies does have the interdisciplinary studies program in it, and they have hired some faculty recently. So they actually have some faculty that are resident in that college where, 4 or 5 years ago, that was not the case. There was nobody that had a faculty line.
These are all colleges that have faculty that do not belong to any other college.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, he's talking like individuals like me and the library and all the institutes and centers that are kind of put together in, like Chuck said, like in the miscellaneous column, that they're not combined with arts arts and humanities and sciences and so on and so forth.
Right. And so, I mean, it would have made sense. I mean, again, we should go into caucus before I open my mouth. So maybe I shouldn't open my mouth. Let me shut up.
So for example, there's 6 RIA awards that are available for this group right now. And their proposal is to bring it down to 1 for the year. Are for this group.
Whoa.
So that's the proposal.
But the other five will go out to faculty in other places. It's not like we're stripping 6 or 5 RIAs away from faculty.
No, you're just reducing the opportunities for people in that group to receive them.
Except Chuck, didn't you say that they didn't have enough viable applicants to receive them?
I received 1 last year.
Well, and John, I'm sure you're a viable candidate. There has been an issue, at least in some years, where they weren't all awarded.
So who's in the College of Graduate Studies, Chuck?
The modeling and simulation faculty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So right now they have an allocation, and what this is doing is taking some away from this and giving it to the other. Question in chat was, what about College of Arts and Humanities, which is?
Well, this will impact the College of Arts and Humanities and all the other colleges in some way. Whether they, with the way the awards are distributed, I can't guarantee that Arts and Humanities would get 1 more. But it probably wouldn't be more than 1 more. It would probably be the case if there are 4 or 5 wards that are going to be redistributed, there would be 4 or 5 colleges that would each get 1 more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think the only other change was that you guys wanted to make ADI to make 50% of ADI go to compression and equity.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we're not inclined to agree to that because the very concept of administrative discretion is that it is discretionary. And and that's why we can't impose it if we have to go to impasse, and we've lost it on some years because of that. But we feel strongly that that needs to be that, you know, if we want some kind of increase for purposes of compression and equity, then we need to bargain that into the raise pool, but not not take it out of ADI. So that's where we are on Article 23.
Okay. We'll take a look at that.
Okay. And let's see, what do we got left? Oh, Article 20.
Okay, just give me a second.
Sure, no problem.
23. All right, 20. Okay, share. All right, where did you want to go, Sherry?
Okay.
Scrolling way down. I'm sorry. Oh, here we go.
Charlie, your laptop has the same problem. It probably is still on Windows 7.
I know. Okay, I think that we are okay with this. So we're going down to the place where it's talking about rejecting agreements. I think that's our, okay.
I'm not sure. I need the team, the UFF team, to tell me about this part.
Yeah.
So I think we're back to in the status quo, I think, almost on that.
I think it was what you were calling what we were calling a decision, and you were calling I get it. Yeah, I think we were in agreement, and we were in agreement on the principle, but not the wording. That's where we were, because we were not trying to replace what is already there. We were just adding in case there was a need.
So I just, I wasn't sure. That's why I want to make sure that I don't delete something or accept something mutually until I'm absolutely sure that you have, accepted it as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
This section was important.
Yeah, because honestly, and if you look at Article 8, it's very clear there too. Once you go up for tenure and you are denied, you are given a year in an instructional capacity, presumably as a lecturer, since you have a PhD, then most likely, or an EdD if you're going up for tenure, you get to teach that out while you're looking for another job. But you're no longer tenure earning because you're not going up again. I mean, you've done your tenure thing. Tenure is up and out. And if you don't accomplish it, you're done, except we give you a year. Because the way the tenure happens, it comes at a bad time, and we want people to have that extra year to be able to get back on their feet and find another job. But we don't want to say that they're still in a tenure earning capacity. And Article 8 makes that really clear too, when it talks about 8.5, that appointment types, that you cannot have a rank of assistant professor, associate professor, professor, unless you are tenured or tenure earning, except under the following circumstances. So, and one of them is, when you have holding on these ranks is placed on terminal contract, which is exactly what happens when you go up for tenure and you're denied. We're not saying that you don't keep your rank. We don't knock you down to being a lecturer. And I said that incorrectly before.
Yeah, that's
it. You are still an assistant professor.
Yeah.
Or so whatever you were, but you're no longer tenuring. That just doesn't make it. Both those articles kind of spell that out. And we just want to clarify that, because it just doesn't seem, you know, doesn't make much sense. You either are or you aren't.
So Shay, so what about the situation where somebody was denied tenure, mm-hmm. and now they are contesting that? And in the end, the resolution is made that the employee could be reconsidered for tenure.
Then they are given the opportunity to go back and, you know, try again. And if they achieve it, then they achieve it. And I think in most instances, well, I don't want to say that, but
I know what you're talking about, and you're correct that once you have been denied, that original category in which you were hired, you are no longer in your earning. However, if you, let's say that they go through the process and finally the resolution is made that, you know, there were some, let's say that the process was not handled.
Sure. Okay. Which happens every now and then.
It happens, and there's a grievance, and then the person says, okay, now that's you can be considered for tenure this next cycle, or mm-hmm. that you're given tenure anyway.
Well, you can't be given tenure anyway. An arbitrator cannot award tenure.
Okay.
So
the person has to. So this may be different here. So for example, Kansas State, where I was, you know, this is basically what happened. The person was denied tenure, and then there was a grievance, and in the grievance, it was basically shown that they did not follow the process. In that case, the provost then said, well, I retract the original decision of not granting tenure, and you are granted tenure without going through any process.
Yeah, that does
that cannot happen here. Is that
what cannot happen here.
I see. So you'll have to reapply, but then you will reapply the next year. You don't have to wait.
Yes. Yes.
So Sherry, I think the confusion is if they're put back into a non-tenure earning line, then they've lost the right to apply for tenure. Is that your?
No, they haven't lost the right to apply to tenure, because the only way
or reapply, for example.
Well, the only way
it would be settled by grievance agreement anyway. So there's a signed agreement that spells
right. Yeah, so if you grieve and either the university agrees without, you know, without going to arbitration, let's just say the provost looks at it, or, you know, someone says, yeah, we messed up. So, you know, we'll give you another shot to go back up again. Mm-hmm. Or you are, an arbitrator says, no, the university messed up. Mm-hmm. You don't, then in either case, if the university says that, there is some resolution, an agreement that's reached between the university and the faculty member that's signed by both parties that says, okay, we understand we messed up. You know, we're settling this grievance and we're not taking it to arbitration because the university's acknowledged that we messed up. Then the parties agree that that person has the right to go up again. If it's through an arbitration, the same thing essentially happens.
If that's like the remedy they want,
that's the remedy they want, is to go back up again. And it's, you know,
I see what you're saying, but maybe we could just put that clause in there if we would with non-tenure earning capacity, and then within parentheses that this does not preclude the individual from applying for tenure, should that be the decision at the end of a
that's what the grievance agreement does to Lott. I mean, the grievance agreement steps outside of the
I understand, but I don't
yeah there. But if that would make it more clear to just say
that would make it more clear, because
our, you know, grievance agreement, you know, if the yeah something I mean we can manipulate language that way a little bit, huh?
Well, I think that this language is in the authority of the arbiter. So basically,
no.
it isn't. I thought the was the language that we're talking about is in the section when it talks about the authority of the arbitrator.
Let me look. Selection of arbitrator.
The arbitrator can tell us that we have to give the employee an extra year of employment. That's what the arbitrator can do. He cannot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We agree that they can't award tenure. However, can they award another attempt to receive tenure?
Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yes, they can. They can tell us we have to let you go up again.
But yeah.
They
okay.
Yeah.
And that.
Okay, I think that's our major concern.
Sure.
Is that when you're saying, okay, well, you know, you're putting back into a non-tenure line, then the assumption is, well, that person can't apply for tenure again. That's where.
No.
That's where the disconnect is on our side in terms of.
Okay, and we can fix that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just kind of as a comment, though, when you are when you're in a grievance procedure, the university continues on with their business. We don't wait. So that person goes into a non-tenure earning category until the issue is resolved, either by settlement or by, you know, the grievance process. So that's why.
Yeah, but the ratification is needed.
But John is right that it is under the authority of the arbitrator section right here.
Mm-hmm.
Authority of arbitrator. So. Perhaps this place, this is kind of like, again, it's legacy language, right? It's kind of in a weird place to say, to have this information. But I think we understand it. We can talk about it in caucus.
Yeah.
It's just a clarification that we need.
Or yeah. you can respond to it later. Is there anything
else? We can find a way to kind of fix that language. Okay.
This is where we were apart on this area.
Okay.
Here.
Yeah. Not file for person. I refuse to do not file for. Okay. We added language just to make it that there's a question of timeliness, because that's the grievance may proceed, but the question of timeliness will be submitted for an arbitrability hearing before the matter is considered further. Because if it's an issue of timeliness, and we end up, and the arbitrator says, and we go through the whole step two process, which in some cases can be fairly lengthy, or step one and a step two. And then the arbitrator says, well, actually, it wasn't timely. We've wasted a lot of time on both parties' parts. So we want to say, okay, if we're saying this isn't timely, we'll immediately halt. Arbitrability hearings take very little time to set up and very little time to conduct. And the arbitrator pretty much tells you on the phone, yeah, I agree with you or don't agree with you. I'll submit, give you a, you know, a written decision stating my opinion. It's not, you know, it's not like a full-on arbitration. So that's our compromise position there, and you can consider it.
Sherry, I did have a question with your the second sentence.
Okay.
If we, with your proposal, the second sentence addresses the question of timeliness. Do we need the first sentence? Because
yes.
We would already agree that.
Yes, because the only. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
So we would already agree that here's the mechanism to address timeliness versus the first sentence that still gives you the opportunity to refuse consideration of a grievance.
Timeliness is not the only reason that a grievance is rejected.
So occasionally we'll get a grievance that just hasn't been signed. And the CBA says we can't do anything with a grievance that hasn't been signed. So we just put it on hold and send it back and say, get it signed, and then we'll process it.
I usually give another week for corrections to be made to the grievances, and they're quite common that there's other grievance problems, but the one that was expressed quite clearly by Claudia was a question of timeliness. She doesn't believe that's a fair decision for the university to make. So in order to address that sort of timeliness, Sherry really thought about that and presented, you know, came up with some language that helped address that issue. But there's other reasons why a grievance could be not processable.
And almost always the other things are like oversights that people just haven't realized that they didn't get it done. But timeliness, because we have this standard that you have to file within so many days of whether somebody knew or should have known of a grievable event, sometimes that gets murky. You know, well, you know, because you can say to us, well, we didn't know that there was a problem here until the agreements, the time for filing the grievance was over.
Claudia and I are really good on working on extending timelines and things like that. That's not a problem. And when someone does something genuinely incorrect, like you said, an oversight, I usually give them time to correct that. I can't think of a time when I didn't. And, you know, I'm not unfair on that situation unless something's simply not processable. But we usually give them time to correct the error. All right. So is there anything else?
Go ahead. We'll take that back.
Yeah.
And consider. Thank you. Thank you for
really
the explanation.
The one where there's genuine dispute most of the time is timeliness. And honestly, we don't run into that very often. I have to say, it's kind of rare, but it does happen. And I understand the concern. So I think we have gotten all of ours off the table. You've gotten all of yours off the table. Let's take the caucus if you guys want to. And yeah, we would
need that.
Okay.
All right. So
I think Chuck set up a caucus site for us, so we can go to that. We're going to leave this meeting, Chuck, and go to caucus, and then we'll rejoin this meeting.
Do you want me to be?
Oh, okay. The recording has started.
Okay, I said that we were willing to accept 19 as status quo. We think we're willing to accept 24. We have two little things that we don't think will be a problem for you. We just want you to look at them to make sure that we are in real agreement there. And we might be able to get that one off the table. 8 and 16 and 13, we want to take a close look at. I think we're very close on those, but we want to just have a, you know, as I said, there was a lot here to look at. 12, I think, you know, both sides know we've got a ways to go on 12, but we're moving closer. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how about you guys? What do you got for us?
I guess we have to discuss because there was less on our plate, right? We had 22, the sticky point there is that it affects mainly non-tenure earning faculty,
yes,
faculty and other faculty. And what we got back from people who were there was that the two semester was really important, having that flexibility, though most people may want one semester because it's fully paid, but that flexibility to have two semesters allows someone like John, for example, to go and finish a degree, right? I mean, so so it's that the length is really important. So we're not close on that one. That one is important. It also probably, you know, when you look at how many people take it, I don't know if this is such a major concern. How many people did you have taken PDL last couple of years?
In my experience, it's usually no more than a dozen.
No more than a dozen people.
But we removed the limitation we had, reduced the number of PDLs. We removed that in an effort to move toward you on this point.
Yeah. But you know, when I discussed it with people who are affected by it, it seems like the length of time, because that allows you to get something accomplished, that is very important. So I think again, we are going basically not just assumption, but this is a vision and an objective that we all have to make this a better place. And I think that kind of flexibility certainly helps. So that is the one that we are not, we hope that you would go back and discuss that with the provost and hope that you would.
Talat, will you do me a favor and go through the one that I sent you today and let me know where the other places are where we might be in agreement, but I wasn't sure because of the crossed agreement part. That would be super helpful.
Right. I will take care. I will take care with 22 so that we have is just these points
of disagreement. I only want the points of disagreement. Other than that, I just need to know. That would be super helpful for the next time when we go over that.
Thank you very much for sending those. We'll take care of that. So that was 22. Then with 23, We really need to have a more discussion on that. Is there any other before we get to 23? You gave us 22. I think Charlie has sent us, remind me, Charlie.
9 and 20.
Okay. So 9 is, again, we didn't have a big, well, most of the discussion was on 23 and 22. 9 is, I don't think, I think we can work. I mean, we will talk about it. We'll talk and get back to you. We'll get back to you next time. We could also, that is one that we should have discussed. I think my personal feeling is that we're not that far apart, but we could probably, I do need to talk to everyone. So yeah, an agreement. Those were the three, right? 9, 23.
And 20, but there were some major things there. So you want to take a look at that.
Okay. So the 23 is the one that took up most of the time, because I think the problem that we are faced with is essentially has to do with equity compression and to some extent also merit. The feeling is that the strategic initiative is one in which there are few colleges that are going to benefit, and there are other colleges that are not going to benefit. So if we're talking about, when you're talking about a salary raise, that affects everyone. When we're talking about these proposals that the president and others are looking at, that is probably going to be mostly from College of Sciences, College of Optics, College of Engineering, and it's not clear to what extent it affects colleagues in other colleges. And so part of what we would like the word to get back to the provost and to the president is that, if we're trying to achieve higher status as a major university, we do have to make sure that all branches of the university are doing well and are and there's a healthy environment in all of them. So that and College of Arts and Humanities in particular feels that they are not on the winning side of things. It could be with other colleges as well, but I heard mainly from College of Arts and Humanities. So the problem that also comes in is that, when we look at salary raises that are given to administrators versus those given to faculty. So I was under the impression that the salary raises for administrators this year is also 2.5. Is that correct? Or?
Well, how are you defining administrators?
Administrator is everybody else who's not in the bargaining unit, who's not a staff member, and who's not a student, I guess.
Well, I mean, okay, so if you're talking about VPs, are you talking about me?
Chairs, VPs, provosts,
Chairs, okay.
Yeah. Associate deans,
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they will. Now, people at the VP level, I want to be very careful here because I'm not sure that I'm right, but I believe that they are not people who fall into this category. They have their own compensation plan, and they are measured each year by certain metrics, and a part of their salary is based on whether they meet those metrics. So they have a totally different compensation plan than all the rest of us.
This is the chair?
So, no, this is the VPs, people like the provost, uh-huh. All of that level people.
Uh-huh.
Certainly chairs and, I suppose you consider Charlie's a director. Yeah, she's an administrator. She'll get her, you got faculty who make more than Charlie, I guarantee you.
Yeah, but I was lucky because I made less than the threshold last time. Some of the administrators last time didn't get the increase because they made they were above a threshold. So I was lucky to get the one-time payment last time.
Yeah, some people didn't even get the one-time payment last time. So, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about everybody who's not,
well,
basically in a faculty in the arts and humanities or possibly education,
maybe some of the social sciences. Yeah, I mean, you're really casting a broad net when you talk about administrators.
Okay, so just to be, if you're talking about, let's say, chairs, mm-hmm. and associate deans and vice provost, do all of them fall in this special category, or do you?
No. No, okay. So they fall into the same category as everybody else. Mostly chairs and associate deans, they're usually given like a stipend to do that, and it may be rolled into their salary when they move back. It has the option of being rolled in. If it is, it's counted as an ADI. But you know, they so yes, I mean, if so you they would start parsing and say that the only people who are going to get the raise are people in your bargaining unit, essentially, that's a different story.
So chairs, the way it works is that you have a salary, and then when you step down, you're no longer chair, then that goes, you get to 9/11 of that salary, typically.
So
one of the things, and I think Kevin, if you could show a little bit, Kevin did a little bit of analysis on this, and that just shows you some of the disparities that one may have. Go ahead, Kevin. I think you can share.
Let me try to share my screen. Yeah. So here's a little part of a spreadsheet. And as background, what I've done is go back from the Florida Right to Know databases and look for people that were present in years 2020, 2019, and 2014. And there were 776 of them that were identified as bargaining unit members in the 2020 role. And so there's, you know, data on the salaries. Average salary in 2020 was 102K. And their sort of average annual increase year to year was 3.4%. So this includes any across the board raises, includes any raises for promotions, tips, RIA, all of the above. It's the Florida Right to Know database just sort of gives you total salary.
So you're saying you only have 776 people in the bargaining unit?
No, that's not what I said at all. To be clear, there were 776 people that were commonly present in years 2020, 2019, and 2014.
Okay.
So this is an analysis by individual.
Okay.
Right? So this isn't some sort of average of the bargaining unit type of deal. This is by individuals. Now, there were also people that were having common job codes to those in the bargaining units, i.e. assistant professors, and so on. Mm-hmm. And but they were not in the bargaining unit in 2020 and were present in all of these 3 years, 2020, 2019, and 2014. And there were 91 of those. Their average, the chairs and deans and associate deans and people of that nature, their average salary was about twice of that of the bargaining unit members. But the issue that's kind of hits me is that the average percentage increase is considerably more. And so this is these would be the people that I think you just told me should expect a 2.5% across the board raise this year. And so we'll look at the data in the fall 2021 data from the Florida Right to Know database will be available, and we can actually go look for that and confirm that. Also, based on title like VP, Associate VP, Assistant VP, I could identify 88 people that were present in 2020, 2019, and 2014, and their average raises, of course, were even larger. So these are your university administrators. You know, these, I think, the colleges primarily, and of course, this is the bargaining unit. So, this is 5.3% represents an average over 6 years. And so clearly UCF has had this practice of paying their administrators a lot more than they do the people that are sort of doing the work in the bargaining unit. And so is there any effort to correct that sort of thing? And, you know, when should that be corrected, if not this year? You know, that's why I'm sort of interested in, like, where are these monies coming from? And how are decisions made about what is the priority for raises? I mean, clearly, you know, over the last 6 years, the raise priority has not been for the people doing the teaching and research. It's been for the people administering them, managing them. So that's kind of all I have to contribute to this discussion. The other thing I would point out is, you know, there is an additional 1.5% set aside for ADIs. Mm-hmm. And I know you want to protect that, but you're not using it. You know, the amount of ADIs that were actually used was sort of more like, you know, 0.8% rather than 1.5. You know, it's just paints such a clear picture that from the perspective of perhaps the Board of Trustees or the President or the Provost, taking care of faculty is really at the bottom of the list.
So I think, the message to get back to, and you guys, the messengers, is that, you know, where does it come in their calculation that, you know, when they go and hire junior faculty or hire new faculty, quality faculty, they also need to remember that they have quality faculty right here, who are here. They don't want to lose them. And if the compression that keeps going, that's not going to be good morale. And who is going to take care of the compression? So, you know, we were told that there is no money. So, you know, right now, for example, you know, is there flexibility that some funds can be added to overcome compression? I think we don't like to see compression. We don't like to see inequities. Because one main reason is that it creates an unhealthy atmosphere. And that's what we are trying to make sure that does not happen. So the question is, how would those compression and inequities be handled? There's no provision for that right now, because there is a small one. It's by no means a minor, the fact that those who are making much less than others, 48,500 that we have talked about, that at least they're getting 1% more. I think that's great. But I think more needs to be done so that this whole issue of compression, we're going to go and be hiring. I mean, what the president has said is that they want to go and hire new faculty. We're talking about the same thing. We have a faculty to student ratio of 1 to 31. So that's, you know, among the lowest. Actually, I found out among the 600 universities listed, we are 579th in that. So this is very, very low. The ratio of faculty to student. So faculty need to be hired. However, we need to make sure that they're all, you know, taken care of the way they should be. And we're not talking about, you know, having salaries that don't compare with our peer institutions. We're talking about equivalent conditions. So that's one thing. The other is that business about the strategic planning. And again, I'm conveying what I've heard from the bargaining unit members over there, is that these tend to affect people like myself, people who are in departments that benefit a lot, right? But we have to take care of everybody across the board. And so that is the message that, you know, even the 3.5% salary increase would have really helped, you know, because we asked for that, we got it, that would have been fantastic. We didn't ask for more, but that's where we are disappointed. And we were hoping that, you know, that we would get we would get it. They got 3% at UF. I don't think faculty at UF were any more under any more stress, maybe a little less, because their faculty to student ratio is 1 to 17. We are 1 to 31. So that's those are some points that do make us wonder about where the priorities are and how would this be. We have a new administration. We hope things will improve, but how would that be done? I think it would be good to know what the plan is. You know, I mean, it could be that this is what can be done, but what is the plan for next year? Are we going to be coming back and talking about it over and over again? Or are we going to come to an agreement where we say we have to work on these things collectively, and these are some things that are important for us, and we'll work on them. So I think most of our time got spent in talking about those details.
So with the meeting tying up, did you agree to sign Article 21 and Article 6?
Yes, for sure. And and one thing is, I will consult with the caucus, and if we can get 9 wrapped up, then we can send that back to you. And if not, then we'll bring it back.
So, do you want me to send 19, or are we still talking about that?
No, I think we'll TA on 19, and we'll pull on everything else.
All right, Talat, so I'm sending you a TA version of 19 as well.
Great. That's wonderful. And then so the way I'm looking at it is, it's 22 that we are apart on, and then we are going to talk over a bit more about 23 and about what possibilities are there. And so our next meeting will be on the 10th, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we hope we can wrap up most things by then. How many?
Nice.
We have, just to do the tally, these are the two that are left, right? 12, 23.
24, I think we're very close on. Okay. We'll bring that back perhaps.
Okay.
16 and 8, there's still some work to be done, but hopefully we can reach agreement on that within a reasonable period of time. I don't know about 13. Our team has to look at that more carefully. And I don't know where we are. You know, at this point, I'm kind of lost track, but we'll see.
So 13, 22, and 23, right?
Yes.
So and the others are hopefully minor.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we'll get back to you on that. Anybody else want to say anything from the team before we call it quits? Okay. If not, thank you very much. I think at least we got few articles to aid.
I'll be looking for them, Talat.
I will send them back. You'll get it later in the evening because I have to go back to the session where I'm stuck.
Ah, your avatar. Go retrieve your avatar.
We actually got 3 off the table today, Talat. I think we got 19, 6, and 21.
We got 19, 6, and 21. That's great. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good week.
Okay, bye-bye.